Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. For this week's literary review, I'm joined by John Mitchinson, co-founder and publisher of Unbound and writer for the British panel show QI. On today's show, we'll crack open Will Menmuir's debut, The Many, leaf through the Serendipity Foundation by Sam Smith, and finally review a biography of Dr. James Barry, one of the most revered army surgeons of all time. All that coming up on the Monocle Arts Review here on Monocle 24. Let's start the show with Will Menmuir's debut novel, The Many. It was longlisted for the Man Booker Prize this year. First of all, John, do you think that was kind of well-deserved? What did you like about this?
I thought it was extremely well-deserved, and it's one of those lovely stories that you get each year of a small publisher, Salt Publishing, who are based in Cromer in Norfolk. This book is it's a very dark, intense novel set in an undisclosed kind of village on the North Cornwall coast. And it has a, you know, it's that wonderful thing you get occasionally with a novel where the guy, Will, is his first novel, and he did a, you know, Arvon Foundation. He's worked, I think, as a literary consultant, and he wrote it in a VW camper van while looking out to sea. And there's a sort of wonderfully... I mean, I love stories like this as a publisher. You know, you always want new voices to come into fiction from wherever. But this has a real integrity about it. It's gothic. It's set in North Cornwall, as I've said. There's a house, an abandoned house, on a sort of a bleak bit of North Cornish coast, and the chimney starts to billow smoke, and the local fishermen who are kind of who have known the previous owner, who was a charismatic and complicated man called Perrin, are become fascinated, and it turns out that there is an incomer who has moved into the village, who is Timothy, which is a great kind of London name. And I guess it's for someone like me who live in a sort of slightly liminal world between London and the country, this book is the best book I've read in recent years about this strange tension between it's full of fantastic writing about the sea, about the empty, polluted sea. There's a sense in which the coastline, which ought to be a place of, you know, rejuvenation and kind of refreshment, has become this sort of toxic sump. So the natural world is under threat, and the people who are coming to the, you know, Timothy, who comes to the coast, is looking for kind of salvation, as a lot of people who come from the cities always are. And he finds himself in a place that is, you know, it's the classic thing. You just move your problems. You don't solve them by going to the coastline. I just think the characters are really well sketched. It's gothic, but it doesn't descend into kind of, you know, there are times when it's slightly trembling on the edge of The Wicker Man, but it doesn't fall into that wholeheartedly. It just seemed to me to be a very strong original debut novel. I mean, longlisted for the Booker seems to me to be absolutely, you know, that's a great thing. I can't see it going on and winning. I think it's a remarkable and interesting book. But I guess that's the thing with fiction, is that each generation finds a way of revisiting these. You know, this is an old story in a way. Outsiders coming into a small community.
I was going to say, it's kind of fertile ground, I guess, and well-trodden ground for the gothic or the horror genre, this idea of an outsider going to a rural village or a coastal village. It makes you think of The Woman in Black in a way.
Yeah.
That kind of outsider approaching a small community.
That's a very, very good... I was thinking, you know, you can never really get beyond Daphne du Maurier when you're thinking of the Cornish coast.
Yeah.
But actually, Women in Black is a perfect... it's not a supernatural novel, but it has elements of what Robert McFarlane has characterised as the eerie. It's got this gloom and its dream. You know, a lot of the characters' dreams sort of figure in the narrative. It's the kind of thing I enjoy. I mean, it's not a thriller. There's no massive kind of, you know, shootout at the end if that's what you're waiting for. But it is a very finely written, intelligent bit of fiction, and I'm sort of very pleased to see the Book of Judges putting it on the long list.
The Many by Will Menmuir is published by Salt Publishing and is out now. Let's move on now to The Serendipity Foundation, the first novel by British author Sam Smith. It starts out with the kidnapping of four British men in Cairo, but what follows is far from the terrorism thriller plotline one might expect. John, perhaps you could first of all kind of explain where the plot goes from this initial incident of the kidnapping.
Well, I will, and I will obviously fess up. This is an Unbound book, so I'm absolutely kind of responsible for it. But the reason I wanted to talk about it there are two reasons. One is I think it's just remarkable and imaginative and playful in a way that very few novels now are. I think the idea of a sort of it has a sort of an 18th century novel of ideas feel about it. The basic idea is that what would happen if we were ransoming people for things that did social good? So instead of saying, you know, if you don't do this, these hostages are going to be killed, what if you were saying, we're going to kill these hostages if you don't do something good? And the point about the book is that the clever thing about the book is it comes up with amazing. The hostages are kidnapped by the Serendipity Foundation, who are a very old, ancient sort of cult whose existence really is to transform the kind of the moral temperature of the world by forcing people to actually confront the things that they really want. And so each of the ransom demands. The very first sort of early stages of the book, the ransom demands are kind of enigmatic. So they kidnap an old woman on the streets of Cairo, and they say that we will release the hostage if you can find out who the hostage is. So it's a wonderful way of getting everybody in the community to figure out who's been taken, and old people, and sort of throwing a light on old. But by the time the four hostages, and there's a sort of cynical journalist who's an expert in kidnapping, and there's a very compromised sort of oil executive, it turns out that all four of the people who've been kidnapped, in a funny kind of way, the kidnapping is a positive thing for them. They're at points in their lives where they really need to make change, and they are involved by the Serendipity Foundation in coming up with ransom demands. And there are a number of the ransom demands are wonderful. The one that I guess everybody who reads the book will remember is they ask for Prime Minister's Question Time to be conducted entirely in haiku. Now, I mean, other than the fact that it's actually a really, really kind of fabulous bit of writing. I mean, Sam Smith manages to do it.
Brilliant. So he does an entire
and it's fabulous, because you're kind of, you know, you're counting the syllables and trying to work out, has he done it? I mean, he does. He totally nails it. But the serious point, I think, about the book is, and it's very, very, very topical. I mean, it gets more topical by the day, which is that, you know, the use of sort of terror, the use of kidnapping, the use of ransoming to grab the agenda, you realize it's quite an interesting idea. What if people who wanted to do good started to use these extreme tactics? And without spoiling the ending, he finds a very, very satisfying way of ending it. There's a brilliant bit where one of the things that the British government has to endorse are acts of guerrilla kindness, which is essentially getting the whole population involved in doing things for one another that are good and kind. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it is that I had a fantastic experience just at the weekend going down to the Lost Gardens of Heligan. Sam Smith is Tim Smith's son, and we had a group of people who'd pledged for the book on Unbound. And there was so much enthusiasm and comment. We decided that we were going to create a real Serendipity Foundation. And that was, we decided that was the inaugural meeting. And we have come up with a fantastic stunt, which I can't tell you about. Obviously, I'd have to kill you if I told you about it. But I mean, I think it's that lovely thing where you get a novel that is fiction that is so close to being not fiction, that it's got so much that's to offer. I mean, Sam is a remarkable man. His wife is from the Maldives. He's done a lot of work for NGOs. He's doing amazing Eden Project stuff all over the world. But this book is kind of, I was sort of thinking, you know, for the Owen Jones kind of generation, the cool young activists who want to be and want to change things, there's a lot of good nonfiction, but who are they reading? I mean, you know, I was thinking you have to go back to sort of Alex Garland to get somebody who can get that kind of, who can make political activism cool. And I think Sam has done it brilliantly. So, we're really proud to be publishing it. And obviously, as a publisher, I'm slightly compromised in praising it. But I think it's a very important book, and I think it will be. We've had the most insane quote. We had an amazing kind of essay from Richard Madeley saying how much he loved it. And I think it's one of those books. It will be. I'm thinking of writers like Russell Hoban who had a similar playful way of writing. I think this is a sort of book that will be passed around on summer holidays, and it's I couldn't recommend it more highly.
The Serendipity Foundation is out now, published, of course, by Unbound. Now, finally, we turn to a profile of Dr. James Barry, a young woman who adopted her uncle's name and broke all the rules of Georgian society by becoming an army surgeon. The authors, Dr. Michael Pries and Jeremy Dronefleet, researched their subject for a decade. Can you tell us a bit more about Dr. James Barry, John? Important character.
It is the maddest story you've ever heard. I mean, you'd be hard pressed not to make this interesting, but James Barry was really Margaret Bulkley, a woman who decided that she was going to pretend to be a man in order to become the surgeon that she felt she ought to be. So it's a lifetime, 60 years of dissimulation. Which she did with very little. I mean, there were occasional. She had an affair with one of the colonial governors in South Africa, and there was a bit of gossip. But she amazingly managed to carry this off. She wasn't transgender. She hadn't gone on. She was a small woman who pretended to be a man.
And right up until her death.
And she had a child. She had a child that was covered up when she was a teenager. It was probably as a result of a rape when she was a teenager. And she covered up this fact all through her life. Now, that would be remarkable anyway. But James Barry was the most influential surgeon in the British Army, because before really even Florence Nightingale had started, you know, there was a famous standoff in Scutari between Florence Nightingale and James Barry, where Barry tears a strip off Florence Nightingale for basically being kind of a sloven. And she pioneered the cleanliness, hygiene in hospitals. I mean, her record, I say her, he, it's very difficult. In the book, they refer to James Barry as a he throughout, because she was a he throughout her life. So, certainly Florence Nightingale she really didn't like James Barry, but James Barry didn't much like Florence Nightingale. And one of the reasons is that Florence Nightingale, one of the tragic truths about Florence Nightingale is until Florence Nightingale had figured out that it was secondary infection that was causing the problem, more people died in the hospital at Scutari than they did from wounds on the front line. So it's a remarkable, complicated story about somebody who achieved. I mean, she transformed. James Barry transformed the way medicine was performed. Certainly, military medicine was performed. He was an unpleasant, difficult, obviously rather high-pitched voice, quite short, used to wear ridiculously padded shoulders and big hats and huge swords in order to impress whoever he was meeting. But there is the poignancy. One of the reasons I really loved this book is I knew about the story, but this book restores the detail in a very poignant way. So her private, or his private case that nobody else saw, was full of drawings of female fashions. So there's this terrible sense that here was a life that it wasn't that she wanted to be a man. She just decided to be a man in order to achieve things. But at heart, she was a sort of secret closet woman. And I think that the two authors who, I mean, it's hard to believe that this story could be told any better than it is. It's a very, very poignant, very richly detailed history of a just utterly remarkable life.
And I mean, you mentioned there that it's very detailed and that we get some amazingly poignant moments. I mean, does this end up becoming a bit of a kind of social historical study as well? It's obviously a fantastic story, but do we see a different side to the age that we might not have?
I think you do. And one of the weird things that you see is that, you know, we have a sort of generally poor view of the Victorian era, that it's very, very repressive. But actually, one of the things you get is a sense that I think quite a lot of people probably did know what was going on. I mean, the authors are quite clever at sort of suggesting that. No, it's a sort of smoking gun thing. Nobody actually says, "Are you a woman?" But there's a sort of a generosity. I mean, it's that thing. I think now it would be a tabloid story and it would be all over. But actually, there was a sort of restraint and a you know, if you sense that people around James Barry could see that whatever he or she was doing was good, and they allowed it to happen. But there's amazing detail about. I mean, if you're interested in just the horror of what warfare was like in the middle of the 19th century, and the total inadequacy of the Crimean War in particular, the total inadequacy of the early stages of that war, and Barry was absolutely, I mean, you know, in a way, it's a very weird thing that Florence Nightingale is somebody that everybody knows, but James Barry is not remembered, and maybe that's the most poignant thing of all. This is somebody who absolutely was a pioneer and was a very charismatic, although difficult, a person who's sort of been lost to history.
Dr. James Barry, A Woman Ahead of Her Time, is published by One World Publications and is out now. And that brings us to the end of today's show, I'm afraid. Thanks very much to my guest, John Mitchinson. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our film review with Tara Judah. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.